Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. We are going to talk about skincare today. It's rapidly approaching the summertime here in South Florida in particular. I'm afraid some of my other friends in the northern states are still struggling with snow again this morning. It's even possible that Monica, who comes to us from North Carolina, may not be able to be on the show this morning. I'm waiting to see if she's able to call in. But we have touched on skin on some of the health shows, and we have talked a little bit about it. And I think the most important thing that we need to remember about our skin is that it's our largest organ. Consequently, that means anything that goes on your skin should be edible. You should be able to put it in your mouth if you're going to put it on your skin. Now, I'm pretty sure there isn't anybody out there who would even consider, you know, swallowing some of the perfumes or the creams or some of the things that we buy over the counter in the stores. And I don't want to go crazy on this. I use perfume. I've used the same perfume all my life. And I enjoy it, and I like it, but it is a choice I make. However, I think that if you have the kind of skin that you're already seeing discoloration, strange spots that you don't know what they are, or moles that change and get funky looking and everything, you need to be paying close attention to your skin. There's a lot of troublesome skin afflictions that people have. There's psoriasis, there's eczema, there's just plain skin, you know, allergies to so many different things. Even I know people who, if they touch wool, oh my God, they raise right up and get like welts on their skin. There's also rosacea, which is mostly on your face, but it's very, very difficult to deal with rosacea. I grew up with a few girls that had rosacea, and I remember people would always say, what's the matter with your face? What did you do to your face? Is that from makeup? Did you get sunburned? I mean, because it can take all different kinds of, colors. Like, it can be very rosy around your cheek. It can have a raised rash. You can have spots up above your eyebrows and on your cheeks and on your chin. I've seen that kind of a breakout come in all different ways. So I think it's a good idea to talk about the care of our skin. I think it's a good idea to think about some of the stuff that we talked about. I think it was 2 weeks ago when we touched on skin, when we talked about the Manuka honey and some of the other things that we discussed on the show. I'm going to bring Shelly in. I do want to say, though, there is a terrible storm in the Carolinas, in Georgia. North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia all had warnings this morning, so we'll have to wait and see whether Monica can get in or not. Good morning, Shal. How are you doing? It's not snowing over there in your neck of the woods, is it?
No, but it was a little chillier than I expected when I went outside this morning.
I know. It was kind of surprising, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I didn't feel it last night. It was cooling a little bit last night, but it actually got cooler as the evening went on, and I was up pretty late last night, so I was surprised.
Well, so I did talk to Monica yesterday, and she said sometimes up on the hill, if they have a bad storm, they lose all their power. And, of course, their cell phones are terrible up there.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see whether she can get in this morning or not. I know she will try, but, you know, it will all depend on the weather. So let's talk a little bit about what we know about our skin. And you mentioned the other day that some of the stuff that you're doing in the book will have some input about sunscreens and things like that. But I also think it's important for people to understand that our skin has a lot to do with our water intake, our food intake, so many different things. So why don't you give some information and then we'll discuss it. Are you ready to do that?
Well, sure. Okay. I mean, I think the biggest thing, and I think a lot of people actually know this now, is that the skin is our largest organ. The skin actually is an organ. It's not just a covering for our body. It's interactive. It absorbs nutrients. So basically the point of understanding that is that whatever you put on your skin, you are, in effect, ingesting, eating, because you do absorb into the bloodstream whatever you put on the skin. That's why there's so many transdermal medications out there today. You know, instead of taking a pill or getting a shot, people are putting patches on their bodies. And the whole concept is because the skin is, in fact, an organ. So once you really understand that, that you can actually ingest, and by using the word ingest, I'm talking about eat, you can actually be eating things that you're taking through the skin, it makes you a lot more conscious of what you're going to put on your skin. And it's highly recommended to start reading labels. So that's some of what we're going to talk about today. And then the other thing is the water factor, because you also eliminate through your skin. And if you're dehydrated, if you're not drinking enough water, all right, and I'm not talking about sodas and soft drinks and things like that. That doesn't hydrate the body, all right? It's essential that people start drinking more good water on a daily basis because that's how your body cleanses through the skin. Part of the detox process is to sweat, is to eliminate through the skin, so it's also very important to, you know, to wipe your skin down at least once a day. If you're not showering every day, you should at very least be wiping the skin off like a sponge bath. You should be cleaning the surface of the skin on a daily basis because you are shedding toxins through the skin. And if you're not continually cleaning it, that those toxins will sit on the outside of the skin and can cause issues for you. So a lot of times people have skin issues and they don't realize it's just simply because they're not wiping the toxins away. Something as simple, simplistic as that.
How do you feel about exfoliating, Shell? How do you, before you get off wiping it down, how do you feel about exfoliating your skin?
I think exfoliating is healthy, obviously, because you do get layers of shedding skin cells that need to be removed. When you exfoliate, you actually enliven and stimulate the cells underneath. But like anything else, you have to do it carefully. You know, I've seen people that exfoliate almost to a fanatical point and they end up damaging the healthy skin that's underneath the skin that's being shed. Exfoliating should be a very mild process. You should use mild exfoliants. If after you've exfoliated your skin, because there's so many different products out there that do it, you're red or sore or anything, then obviously you're using something you need to steer clear of. The exfoliating process should be very mild. You should just feel a little bit smoother skin when you're done. There shouldn't be any redness or soreness. And if you're having that, then either change your products or be less vigorous when you exfoliate.
Monica just came through, so I'm going to invite her in. Good morning, Monica. Is everything okay there?
Yes, good morning. I overslept.
Okay,
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. I just was worried about the storm because, of course, the internet is, is crazy with it. Everybody's showing maps, and they're including Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. So I just was a little bit worried, but I'm glad you're here. No problem. Shelley has stepped in and has talked about our skin being an organ, and what we put on our skin, we should be able to ingest. So right now she just touched on, she talked about wiping down your skin and keeping your skin clean, of course, and I asked her about exfoliation, and she said, yes, that's good to get rid of the dead skin cells and things like that. But what I was going to ask next is, do either of you have something that you would prefer? I mean, I know estheticians use brushes. They use They use pads. They use all different kinds of things. Do either of you have any input as to what the best instrument to use to exfoliate is?
Well, see, I personally, I don't use any kind of an instrument. Health food stores sell different types of cleansers that act as an exfoliant, and I don't have the empty tube anymore. I just ran out of it. But what I used to buy at Whole Foods was a tube, and I don't recall the brand name, but basically what it was sea vegetables that had some rough particles in there, and it was very, very mild. It smelled nice. It had a nice, refreshing smell to it, but it was all natural. I mean, when you read the ingredients, there was no chemicals in there. It was all natural, it was even fragrance-free and everything. It had a naturally nice, clean fragrance to it, but it was very effective. And when I would use it on my arms or my face, my skin would feel very smooth afterwards, and it would actually be a little bit moisturized as an effect from it. But, so there's a lot of exfoliants out there that are in like a scrub type of form, I guess, you know, like these lotion scrubs you can wash your face with. And you just have to, I used to get one years and years and years ago. In fact, I think it's still sold. It had like apricot seed particles in it. That one was a little too rough for me. And sometimes my face would get red. So I stopped using that one. That's why I was saying, you know, listen to your body. If you're getting too red or irritated, then that product is not for you. Either that or you're being too aggressive with it. But, exfoliating should be a very gentle process, in order not to damage the healthy cells that are underneath the cells that you're shedding.
Well, I think one of the things I asked that question for is, you know, a lot of things that you can buy in the drugstore at the Walgreens and the CVS's and all those kind of drugstores come with a man-made kind of a loofah thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Those little scrubby things that appear to be some kind of plastic. There's nothing on them that really tells you what they're made of. Do either of you have any input on one of those as to whether or not that is appropriate to use on your skin? Or do you think, especially people that are already struggling with skin issues, do you think they should be using something that is man-made like that, or do you think it's not a big deal?
I think whatever you put on your skin should be as natural as possible, and it doesn't have to be as hard as a Brillo pad or anything like that. But if you want some exfoliation, if you wear heavy makeup, that makeup will sink into your pores. You know, it's on your face for like 12 hours at a time. So the only thing that I would say to use would be years ago, they made washcloths that are a little rougher, a little nubbier, not soft like velvet, like some washcloths are. That's all you really need to do as far as using an instrument for exfoliation or to get that embedded dirt out of your skin. When you do, I don't use soap. I don't use any creams or anything like that you would buy at a store. The best thing to do to wash your face and to exfoliate is to use coconut oil. That's what I wash my face in. It absorbs into your skin, removes the impurities, takes the other oil out, will get rid of your acne, all that. I mean, people think, well, oil on my skin? I already have skin issues. Why would I want oil? Because it's antifungal, antibacterial, and it's a food. You know, you can eat it. Basically, what you do is you rub the coconut oil, it's got to be virgin, organic is the best, all over your face, let it sit there for 20, 30 seconds to absorb into your skin, and then take a slightly rougher washcloth, put it under as hot water, as hot of water as you can possibly stand, and then wring it out, and then drape it over your face like they used to do in the cartoons years ago that you've seen. You know how they used to give a man a shave and then put the hot towel on his face?
Right.
You do that. You do that. It absorbs. You breathe in those vapors. It's very relaxing. And rinse it out. Do it a couple more times. And your skin will glow. It's really amazing. And if you need an exfoliant, you can use something simple as baking soda. Again, another food. Dampen it. Rub it all over your skin and then rinse it off with some warm water with that nubbier washcloth. And sometimes I use Redmond clay. Again, another food. And it does so much.
Now, what is Redmond clay? I've heard of it, but I'm not... Is this something that you would have to buy in a health food store, or where would something like that be able
yeah,
to...
Yeah, at a health food store, or you can get it over the Internet. It's a detoxifier. You could eat it, and it detoxifies your system.
Hmm.
It also helps with stomach ailments, diarrhea, food infections. What it does is the particles of the clay, if you were to eat it, have a negative ion charge, and they will sop up heavy metals that you ingest. They actually remove it. They encapsulate these heavy metals and then removes it from your body when you go to the bathroom.
Yeah,
but,
A clay at Hippocrates when we were there. I don't know if they still sell it. I'm probably sure they do. But there was a dietary clay they were selling there exactly for that reason. People would ingest it, and it would absolutely absorb toxins and heavy metals on the way out of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was curious when you said the Redmond clay. I wonder if it's a similar composition.
Yeah, it is.
The clay that we used at Hippocrates was green clay. Is this clay green,
that's
the Redmond?
That's French clay. No.
Hmm.
Redmond clay is a bentonite clay of the montmorillonite family. It's from Utah. In the volcanic mountains there, they take it out of the earth. What you're talking about, the green clay, that's French clay. That has different properties also. But the bentonite clay that I use, it could be used internally, like I said, same thing, or externally to make a clay mask. It also helps with insect bites and bee stings, rashes, boils, acne, burns. I've used it for everything. And it's loaded with minerals also. I mean, it's calcium, iron, iodine, magnesium, zinc. I mean,
well, I don't know if this bentonite clay is different, but I had had a particular health concern because of bentonite clay. That's why I was concerned as to what type of clay this was. I had gone on the Arise and Shine cleanse, and this was again this is about 20 years ago, so maybe the bentonite clay is manufactured differently. But they actually had to recall the product for a while because they found that bentonite clay had traces of lead in it, and people that already had some metal toxicities were actually reacting to that and getting worse, which was what happened to me. I had already had mercury poisoning, and that actually increased the lead load that I was suffering from. So it was actually taken off the market, and supposedly when they put it back on the market, they weren't using the bentonite clay anymore. They had changed to a different clay. So that's just something for people to research. This Redmond clay might not be the same issue, but there has been historically an issue with bentonite clay because even though it can clear other metal toxicities, which was kind of like the benefit from it, it did have traces of lead in it. So it was kind of like... In some cases, it could be counterproductive with certain individuals.
Right. People should do the research, and there's bentonite clay comes from many different areas of the world. So, you know, who knows? I guess at some point the one you had had the lead in it, but Redmond clay is a pretty popular brand, and that's what I use. So for
yeah, I'm
going to
look into
exfoliation. But the most important part.
When
go
you
ahead.
Talk about, I'm sorry. When we talk about exfoliation in most spas, when you get you know, when you get a scrub, you get a salt scrub, and when you have a salt scrub done, I've always believed that that was nourishing for your skin and it was good to exfoliate. And when you leave, oh my God, you feel like somebody just gave you new skin. It's a wonderful feeling. Are you opposed to using salt for an exfoliation?
Me? No, I've tried it too. I use pink Himalayan salt.
As I was just going to say, yes, mm-hmm. The pink Himalayan salt is outstanding for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that would work really well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I'm thinking to myself, if somebody goes out today and wants to go to a spa and nobody's using any of these more natural things that we're talking about, I know that they use the Himalayan salt. And it is a wonderful, wonderful feeling after you have it done. So let's get on the subject of something that's near and dear to my heart here in my household right now, because I have teenagers, and that's teenage acne. Now, one of my grandchildren and one of my sons suffered from cystic acne, which is horrific. And, of course, the main fix for that in the world of doctors is Accutane. And for those of you who have never heard of Accutane or had anything to do with it, it is actually they don't even like young girls to use it because it can cause them to be barren. They warn you. They have psychological testing done on a young man who continues use of Accutane for any length of time. My oldest grandchild used it. And he was a mess. I mean, he couldn't. I had to keep buying white T-shirts. I'd have to wash them in baking soda. I tried natural stuff. I took him to our esthetician at the Institute. We did all kinds of things with everything we could find to work with. And that kid suffered for 2 years. I mean, suffered. You go to school and your shirt sticks to your chest and your back and your neck. He still has scars. And the Accutane, we got to a point where one day, he's very level, very even-tempered, and one day I yelled at him for something, and he turned around and was hysterically crying. So I realized that, you know, he'd been taking it for too long, so we took him off of it. But I tried everything natural that I could do, and I had somebody I really respected as an esthetician working with me, and I'd paint stuff on him and do everything. At any rate, now I have a couple teenagers here who have mild acne. They do not have the cystic acne. They do not, you know, they're not a mess, but they do have it. And we use light, like sea breeze and stuff like that, or witch hazel and things like that for them to keep their faces clean. I'd like to talk about that a little bit because I think if you look in that section in any drugstore, oh, my good God. You almost need to be a scientist to even figure out what they're talking about. So let's talk about that a little bit, girls.
Well, before we actually talk about lotions and things like that you can use, part of it's dietary, part of it's external, part of it's internal, that type of thing. And I don't remember if I ever asked you about this, but did you ever try light therapy, specifically blue diode light therapy on your grandson?
Yes. Yes, we did try that. And
did that offer any help at all?
Not enough so that it was noticeable. It felt more comfortable to him because they wouldn't be so throbbing.
Blue diode therapy, from what I understand, is that actually goes underneath the pore or to the base of the pore and starts getting rid of the bacteria that's creating some of the cysts and things like that. So I know that there's been some people that have gotten extreme benefit that had skin disorders for years and then started doing the blue diode therapy, light therapy, but one treatment doesn't do it. In the beginning, while things are very, very erupted, you'd have to go as many as four times a week in the very beginning, and then you taper down as the condition improves. So I've seen a couple people that got real results with that.
Well, I used a light when my daughter had the cat attack her. If you can remember back when that happened, Shelley.
Yes, remember that.
Cat, Monica, the cat was being chased by a dog. Diana tried to help the cat, and the cat just jumped right up on her head. And she had long hair. He just got his claws right into her scalp. And when they tried to pull the cat off, he wouldn't let go. Finally, when everybody let go of him, and he was a big cat, he jumped off of Diana's head, and his those big toe claws that they have on their hind legs,
right,
and the claws in the front wreaked havoc on her scalp. And I took her to the emergency room mostly for help with pain, because he lacerated both sides of her temple in her hair with his claws. So we went, and I had a terrible time in the emergency room because it was just as usual, the emergency room experience is never anything that you like to remember. But what I ended up doing was I actually used processed ocean water that had been filtered and cleaned that we used for growing and used for other things at the Institute. And I also used colloidal silver. And then to protect it for the rest of the day, I go over there every morning and dress all those wounds with that, because you can't sew them up because of cat fever and things like that. You have to leave them to open to drain. So the only thing I put on them that I would consider not so natural was Neosporin, and I did that just to try to keep other debris out of it. And then I'd go back in, and I also used the healing light for that, and she would, it was the triple light. It had blue and green and yellow lenses on it, and it would calm her. She would fall asleep when the light was on her. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. Those lights are amazing, and of course, she ended up being fine. She doesn't grow hair in those spots, but she has such a huge head of hair, you would never know that. But
right.
Nobody wants the emergency room to speak of, you know. I mean, they were like, what do you want us to do, believe it or not? So the lights, I think, are a good thing, too. And I did try that with our local friend who Shelley and I know, a doctor who's an esthetician, and she helped me with a little bit with the light and with Michael's burns as well. They used some special lights to help Mike heal after the burn. So I believe in the lights too, but a lot of people don't have access to those. I'd like to be able to give people choices to make if they're having some of these smaller problems, even the dry skin. Did you ever see somebody who just has the rashes? Like, I see this in men more than anybody else. Their eyebrows, they get like a dander in their facial hair, like if they have a beard, or their eyebrows, and they get real flaky around there. I suspect it has something to do with their liver, but is there something you girls would suggest for them to bring comfort to the front of their face, while they're going through an outbreak like that? Or do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, coconut oil.
Okay.
I sound like a broken record, but coconut oil would take care of that.
Mm-hmm. When you said that, I thought to myself, I'll bet that would be perfect. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Well, you know, we have a mutual friend. Monica doesn't know her, but Rena, you do, our friend Paula, and she's a big coconut oil advocate also. She's been doing research with it, so and it's very versatile, and there's a lot of different things you can do for it. But coconut oil does have amazing properties, both as an emollient and internally and externally, and as she said, like the antifungal, antibacterial properties. Coconut oil is really one of the healthiest oils you can put in your diet, and mm-hmm. and use it as well. You know, but talking about the teenage acne, before we get off that real quick, most teenage acne is a combination of partly diet, and it's some of the things in the diet that people don't suspect, and hormones, all right? And that's why it's during that shift when they're going through puberty that they have most of their issues because of the hormonal fluctuations. There's a lot of articles and research that's been done that if they lighten their dietary load, stay away from regular factory farmed meats and things like that, which really, really screw with the hormone levels, and you're going to find it affecting teenagers more than adults because their hormones are in flux, so they are more sensitive to the hormones that are injected into chicken and beef. And, you know, a lot of people think it's just red meat, but there's hormones injected into all animals. All factory farm animals are given growth hormones because they're trying to get the animals to size and to slaughter quicker. Instead of letting them go their natural lifespan, they want them to be ready to go to slaughter in 16 weeks instead of a normal, you know, normal growth pattern, which might take them, you know, into 30 weeks or something like that. So this has a lot to do with the prevalence of skin disorders and other things that have to do with hormones, you know, boys getting mustaches and beards younger and younger and younger, girls starting their menstruation earlier, and it all plays into this whole thing with these skin issues that a lot of kids have today, and a lot of the cystic problems, which is also becoming more prevalent. So those are two areas to look in, lightening the load. If the child's not interested in becoming a vegetarian, then really look to free-range meats that are free of those hormones. These are some of the ways to counteract some of the things that can actually cause these skin conditions, especially while their hormones are really in a state of flux.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I agree with that. I think that our food, and every morning I talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about on Facebook so that people know whether the show is going to be something that they really have an interest in. I think that your food, obviously, has a lot to do with how healthy your skin is, for sure. But I also think that a teenager, believe it or not, even when you are the one responsible for cooking for them or preparing their food and doing all that stuff, you still don't stop them from participating in things that are very, very unhealthy. The soda. The choices of having sugar drinks over, you know, just plain water. I do have one grandchild who drinks a lot of water, and he's always active. I would say he's incredibly healthy. He's the one who's joining the Army. He works out at least 3 times a week. He runs. He does everything. They're both very healthy, the two teenagers here, but they're both at a breakout time. One is 16 and one is 17. And they're not bad, but it's enough so that they worry about it because, you know, kids don't like to be picked on about their skin, and that can be an
mm-hmm.
issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, they're using, you know, I either buy plain witch hazel or I buy sea breeze, which I'm not real fond of, but it is the lighter of all the things just to help them keep the dirt out of their pores so that they don't get any dirtier. But how about the manuka oil or the manuka honey that we talked about before? If they have inflammations, I see one of them, you know, bothers his face all the time. He gets that from his grandmother, I think. So is there something of all these natural things that will, soften it? Because what I think happens is they reach to their face to touch their face with their dirty fingers. They just got done playing basketball. I look at their hands and I'm like, oh my good God, what have you been doing with your hands, right? And their dirty fingernails and everything. And I make them go wash their hands, but I see them touching their faces all the time. And I think sometimes if the face is softer and is not itchy, then they tend to leave it alone a little bit. The coconut oil is the best choice, or do you think the manuka honey would even be a step up?
Both, actually, would be good. Like, you could do at night, before they go to bed, the coconut oil, like I said, with the hot towel over the face, breathing in the vapors. That's really good. And then in the morning, do the manuka oil, because if manuka oil can cure MRSA, like we talked about a couple
right.
of weeks ago, then mm-hmm. it does
and
a fantastic job with acne.
Okay.
And then you would just... go ahead.
You're saying manuka oil. Is that what you mean, or do you mean manuka honey?
No, I'm sorry. Manuka
That's
honey.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I thought so, but I
yeah,
didn't want anybody else
the manuka to honey. And just take a half a teaspoon, rub it over the face, let it sit for a few minutes, and then again with the hot towel or hot
okay.
washcloth, and then rinse it off. And that would really work. Also, you were saying the sea breeze that you use as a spray or a dab on.
Yeah.
That's not so natural and good.
Mm-hmm. No, I know
raw
it is.
Apple cider, right, raw apple cider vinegar would return the pH of the skin to an even keel, not acidic, not too alkaline. That would be better than a sea breeze type thing. And, yeah, the manuka honey would do really well, along with the coconut oil, as a face wash, never using soap or any creams or anything like that on your skin. Just those two things would go a long way towards helping.
Well, that's good information, and I'm gonna do that this week for my two boys. Well, actually, for all three of them, because the oldest one is the one that had the cystic acne, and he's still he's very careful. He doesn't use any like bar soap or anything like that. And he, how do you both feel about aloe and aloe products? You know, like at Whole Foods, you can buy aloe soap that doesn't have anything in it. You know, how do you guys feel about that? I know it's a burn plant, and I know it has lots of good things in it, but if I use aloe, I get itchy, so it's not for me. But how do you guys feel about aloe?
Well, if you're not sensitive to it, obviously. I mean, like anything that's good, almonds are one of the highest nutrient-dense foods there are, and I'm allergic to them. So, but I always recommend almond and almond milk to people, you know. But with aloe, it's highly beneficial, but you have to get it in pure form. So much of the aloe that's sold is processed. It has other additives in it, so you have to really read labels. There's only a few sources of aloe out there that are really pure in nature. You want to go with the organics. You want to go with the ones that don't have any additives or colorings to them, you know, and those are the ones that, you know, you're not always going to get a stable color from it because there aren't additives to make it look a particular way. So, again, your health food store is your best option. And read labels, make sure that it's pure aloe. You want to get organic in nature. There's a company that's actually down here in South Florida called Stockton Aloe, and they actually produce a different genus. It actually has a different DNA genetic makeup than other aloes. The gentleman who's passed away now, you and I both knew him, Mr. Stockton, actually traveled the world examining different types of aloe plants and actually found this one type of aloe that was superior to all others, brought it to Florida, this is where he lived, and he actually grows it. It's the only place in the world you can buy this particular genus of aloe, and you can both drink it or use it as cream. They've made creams out of it and stuff like that. It's fairly expensive compared to other aloes, but it's also a superior product. So that particular product, actually I'm trying to use that right now to heal my dog from some of his issues. I tried coconut oil on him. It didn't work. It was an experiment I was running. So now I'm looking to the aloe to see if that helps to heal him inside and out. But because of the potency of this and the curative properties of it as opposed to other aloes, it's quite an amazing product. But any aloe is good, providing it's a pure product. And obviously the best is to grow your own aloe plants. And if you need aloe, just to take one of the leaves, cut it open, and use the gel that's inside.
Oh,
yeah,
yes, as far as aloe goes, one thing that I found, I had a burn or something, on my hand, and I had an aloe plant here, and I cut it open and squeezed out the tip of it onto my skin, and my skin started burning. It didn't heal. It got worse. Well, I found out that the first squeeze out of from an aloe leaf is what protects that leaf. It's kind of caustic, so you want to let that drain out first before you use the aloe.
Oh, that's interesting. The way I was showed to do it is to take the leaf and slice the spine, not use what was in the tip. I never knew why not to use the tip. That's an interesting piece of information. But I was actually showed to take the leaf, split the back of it, and take it from the center and not use the tip. But I never knew why they said not to use the tip, so that's interesting information.
Yeah, I didn't know that either until I read it several years later. I'm like, oh, that's what happened to me.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. I know years ago, my grandmother, when we lived here in Florida, my dog got mange. And grandma said to me, it's all right, we can fix him. And I said, with what? And she went out, and there was one growing in the backyard, and she took it, and she took her fingernail and slid it right down the side of it. And I've never done it any other way, just from watching her that time. And we rubbed it on the dog's mange, and it was gone in 2 days. I mean, he didn't have it like your poor little guy does, Shell, but it was just on his nose, and it cleaned it up immediately. So it is an amazing plant, and you're right about Mr. Stockton's aloe. I used it. I've given it to people as well as the green clay who have colon cancer. And in many cases, they bleed from their rectum, and it's very, very uncomfortable. And both of those products, just as a side note, if you will, helped people heal and seal some of the bleeding in their rectum and in their anus and help them be more comfortable. Both products, just by drinking the aloe and by mixing a cup of the green clay with some good water and drinking it down. So both of those products are good for that as well. I just thought I should mention that because I don't know when we'll get another chance to talk about this or if we remember it. So It is an amazing healer, and sometimes these people were really bleeding heavily. So amazing stuff. So
One of the things that I wanted to mention, because I think it's important, and I don't know if we're going to get to it today, but talking about skin issues, and I would like to see if Monica agrees with me on this. One of the things is not to use products that have petroleum in it. It's so widespread in cosmetics and first aid, like you said, the Neosporin before, which is a petroleum base that they put the antibacterials on. And there are so many holistic remedies out there that are petroleum-free. I use a calendula cream that's made by a company called The Rub, and it's very, very effective. It's completely homeopathic. There's no petroleum in it. But there's actually a company called Unpetroleum, and they have a whole line of products, like they have something called multipurpose jelly, and I guess it's sort of like the unpetroleum version of Vaseline. They also have a eucalyptus rub that would be like Vicks Vapor Rub, but it's made with castor oil, beeswax. It's got coconut oil in it, which would make Monica happy, and it's vitamin E in it. So it's a very good composition base made with castor, coconut oil, vitamin E, and beeswax, you know. So that's the foundation, and then they put the other things on it, like eucalyptus, and that would be your Vicks Vapor Rub and things like that. So they have a wonderful line of products, but petroleum jelly is really a toxin. So if you're using anything that has that as a base, it's counterproductive because you're helping here but hurting there with the petroleum as the base for the product.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It is the worst thing that's out there, and it's the first thing that all new mothers will grab is the Vaseline Vaseline, you know, to put on their baby's bottom and all that, when all they really need is coconut oil, you know.
That's right. Right.
And it will soothe and it will cure any little diaper rash or anything like that, you know. So, yeah Vaseline is horrible, any kind of petroleum product.
On that note,
it's a byproduct from the oil production that, you know, it goes into your car.
That's true.
Well, on the note, though, of diaper rash, I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't even have that in my notes, but that's certainly something that should be discussed. How do you feel about, obviously, the coconut oil is a good idea. How do you feel about cornstarch?
I don't like cornstarch because so many individuals today have allergies to corn, and so much corn is either hybridized or GMO'd, and if you're getting cornstarch that's made from hybridized or GMO corn, because remember, your skin is an organ, it's like a digestive organ, and so many kids that I've seen actually react to the cornstarch. My mom can't use anything that's got cornstarch in it, like powders, a lot of powders have it. She'll break out in a rash instantly. So if you're using that on an infant who may already have been developing this sensitivity, you're actually going to increase the problem, not reduce it.
Well, I would say to you that if you put cornstarch on a baby and it doesn't help dry it up immediately, then you shouldn't be using it again. But my experience, I've never had it not help dry up a baby. And I'm sure you're right about the allergies to corn, but for me, there's no perfume in it, so you don't get that. And baby powder, not one of my kids could use Johnson's baby powder, not ever.
Yep.
Not under a diaper where they sweat and the perfumes and the talc and everything would make them worse, actually burn them once they urinated.
Right.
So,
you know, there's a company out there, if you remember one of the people we worked with at Hippocrates, was all natural. I mean, she got like all organic clothes for her baby and all that. And she was a vegan and she was raising all her kids vegan and they're incredibly healthy. And she found online a store, because I went into it and I was looking around. She told me about it. And they sell all completely organic, all natural products for babies, powderless powder, which is interesting, but it has no powder in it. It has no talcum in it, which can sometimes be harmful to their lungs. But they have different powders. They don't use cornstarch, so it's free of powder, free of cornstarch, you know, free of all these things that might be a problem. But I don't remember what they used, but I remember it was all natural. They have all the unpetroleum products, different salves to use on them that don't have petroleum and things. But it's a whole line of baby products that are, like, free of everything. And I can't remember the name of it, but if you Googled it, like, all-natural baby products or organic baby products, you'd probably find this website. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a friend in upstate New York who used to work with us at the Institute, too, who runs a shop that is exactly
right.
She has all the natural products and even cribs and things like that are all made from wood that hasn't been treated and no pesticides on it and baby diapers and everything in her place is natural. So that is becoming more and more. But simply speaking to people who do not have the either the know-how or the ability or the time or whatever it needs to be able to go through, I'm trying to keep this kind of simple for those that are just looking for fast answers so that they can take some of the things off their plate. If you're a mom of three or four kids, your time is incredibly valuable. And I think that if we can open some doors to some things that are, you know, in the grocery store that they can just pick up when they go in the grocery store, that's awesome for them. Awesome. I knew it would have been for me when I was young. So you both agree that cornstarch is okay as long as they don't have some kind of a corn allergy. And, I've never had anybody say that to me, Shell. So that's good information as well.
Yeah,
I think
I have
it
a high corn allergy,
organic.
So maybe it runs in my family. But I had several of the infants in my family could not use the cornstarch for that reason. And like I said, my own mom can't use any powder that has cornstarch in it. It actually makes her get a rash. So that's why I was away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's good information.
I would use the cornstarch, and that's fine, because it does really help. And I had all my kids before the mid-90s, and I did use cornstarch. And in the mid-90s is when they started doing the GMO corn, and that's pretty much what we have in this country. So I wouldn't choose any cornstarch off of a grocery store shelf unless it was organic and GMO free to put on a baby, because that would be the worst thing you can do. You know, ingesting it is pretty bad, you know, but putting it on a baby, it has to be organic.
Point. Well, and that's good information as well. I'm going to tell you though, I'm pretty sure that there isn't any organic cornstarch at Walmart or Winn-Dixie or Publix. So you're going to have to go in search of that, ladies. If you're out there listening, you're going to have to go in search of that. But that is good information. And baby powders with all the perfume in them are never good for your babies. Never, never, never. So keep that in mind when you're making your choices. So,
seeing a little bit more organics trickle into some of the regular stores, like I've gone to Walmart, Target, and Publix lately. I don't really go to Winn-Dixie, but I go to the other three. And every now and then I'm starting to see more and more organic products pop up on the shelves. I really don't see anything that says non-GMO. I guess they're not sensitive to that yet. And some vegetarian options, but not a lot. But I'm curious to see. I mean, there was a time that you wouldn't see any of that in a regular grocery store. So maybe over time they'll get more and more serious about having, you know, organic options available in regular grocery stores.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that they will. I mean, look at all the stuff we just us three ladies have watched change. We're all, I know I'm the oldest, but we're all in the same arena within 10 years of each other. So many things have changed. Many things have changed in the past 5 years. I do want to touch on rosacea. Rosacea is very hard on the people who have rosacea. And if you're in school and makeup doesn't usually hide it, I've had some rosacea people tell me that if they buy real expensive mineral powder, the mineral makeup, you know, the dusting powder and stuff like that, it takes the redness. I'm not sure that that's healthy for them. I ask them where they get the mineral powder. Most of them go to, you know, like any kind of a store and find mineral powder. And I'm like, I'm not sure that's good for you. And doesn't it dry it out and make it itchier? And some say yes, some say no. Any input on the rosacea? Rosacea is usually internal as well. But I'm looking for something that's going to bring some relief topically, and also hide a little bit of the rosacea off of a young girl's face, you know.
I don't really know a lot about rosacea. I mean, I've met a couple of people at the institute who had it. I haven't a lot of dealing with it. Do you know what rosacea actually is, Reenie? Do you know what organ is producing this in the skin? I mean, is it a skin disorder, or is it a disorder of some organ, and this is the symptom that's showing, you know, the outward expression of the disorder?
I think it's a skin disorder, and I do believe that it is exacerbated, though, by stress and things like that, and of course, lifestyle. But, you know,
that's sort of like eczema and all the other. They're all aggravated by stress.
Yeah,
I don't really know that much about rosacea. I mean, I would think any of the remedies we were talking about, you know, certainly the coconut oil. But I'm thinking that since a lot of what erupts on the skin starts internally first and then produces outward onto the skin, you would have to really know which particular organ was manifesting that way, and then you could actually address the nutrient needs of that organ. But I would tend to think that coconut oil, because it's so versatile, would benefit these people. But you're also talking about covering up the redness as well.
Yeah.
There are natural makeup out there that are free of everything that should aggravate them. They think if somebody has rosacea, they should be shopping only in a health food market and looking for cosmetics that are free of everything that don't clog the skin pores.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll go along with that, but I think that one of the biggest things, like I said, is the embarrassment of, I mean, because I've seen some girls that, like on their cheeks and right on their cheekbones and on their chin, must have something to do with being closer to the bone of, your bone parts of your face. Because I don't remember seeing somebody, you know, with the fatty part of their cheek being real inflamed.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen anybody like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alicia, is their skin red all the time, or is it only red when they're emotional and reacting to something? Thinking rosacea is like a 24/7 type of redness, isn't it?
Well, it can be, but no, it has flare-ups. It has definitely has flare-ups, it's lots of what's the word I want? You can wake up one morning and have it really be terrible. And if you have I've seen girls with nothing on their face. And, of course, I've always asked what kind of soap are you using. If you're using something that's drying it out or it's got perfume in it, you're making it worse. You know, there's lots of medications out there for it, because I did look up some information. I never did find anything that actually told me what it's from, but chances are it has something to do with, well, maybe even liver, like psoriasis and stuff like that has something to do with your liver and the dryness of your skin, and that's usually how you tell a really profound alcoholic usually has some kind of disorder. So it usually comes from having something to do with the liver. I could be wrong about that, but I believe that that's true. So at any rate, when we were talking, I was thinking to myself, you know, what sounds the most soothing to me of all the things that we talked about is the honey. I don't know why, but for me, it just seems like maybe that would be the most, coconut oil does too, but the honey is the consistency of honey. Coconut oil can be kind of, I don't know. I've never used it when it has any real consistency. The coconut oil, we use it at Hippocrates to help people insert their enemas. Coconut oil is what we used as a lubrication, and that's very thick, almost Vaseline-y coconut oil. Is that the kind of coconut oil
be liquid. You buy it, and because I was using it, I told you I was using it for the dog, and when I got it and it was in the cold store, it was like white. I mean, it was like solidified, solid.
I've always seen it too.
Right, but if you set it out at room temperature for any length of time, it turns into a liquid.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, under 72 degrees, it's liquid.
Right.
Higher than 72 degrees, sorry. It's liquid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it would be very easy to put on. It wouldn't be difficult to put on. It would spread nicely.
Okay. So maybe that's what we tried first is the coconut oil. Okay, but we're out of time, girls. I think we answered a lot of questions. I am going to do my own testing here at home with my boys, and we will have another show about skincare maybe in a month or 6 weeks after I do some of this stuff, and we'll see what kind of results we get. I think I'm looking forward to having a little bit of fun with that, I hope. So I want to thank you both. Is it still snowing there, honey, or is the weather not as bad as they said it was going to be?
It hasn't started yet. They say we're getting 10 inches. It's coming. It's coming.
Ooh, wow.
So who knows?
Well, be safe. Be safe. And give all my cousins my love and tell them to be safe. And thank you so much.
Okay.
We will be back on the air with Shelley and Monica next Wednesday. Everybody go out there and have a great day. God bless. Thanks, ladies.
Thanks, Renee.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Monica.